Good morning. I'd like to call the meeting of the Minnesota Senate Health and Human Services Finance and Policy Committee to order. It is Wednesday, March 19th, 2025, and we do have a quorum present. We have several bills on the agenda today, all related to EMS, and we're happy to be able to highlight all these bills. Our first bill on the agenda is Senate File 2128, Senator Seeberger. Welcome to the committee, and please begin your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. It's my pleasure to be here to speak to Senate File 2128, which is a bill dealing with community emergency medical technician certification requirements. We have this wonderful program in the state of Minnesota with community paramedics and community EMTs. And what that means is these are practitioners who take additional training, receive additional education to be able to go out into the homes of folks and provide care for people where they are. This bill would be an update to certifying community EMTs, and it would make becoming a community EMT more accessible to people interested in this career path by opening up alternative educational pathways. Healthcare systems with community EMTs educational programming can be used, and it can be used an alternative to traditional college and university route. And in addition to certification changes, the bill increases pay for community EMTs up from $9.75 to $25 per 15-minute increment and $100 for the hour of treatment. It's a great program. I think it's an underutilized program, but it's something that we're working on in the field of EMS to create a more robust model of how we provide pre-hospital health care to folks. I have the director of the Office of EMS, Dylan Ferguson, here to answer any questions, but I'm willing to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you. Did Mr. Ferguson want to provide testimony on the, just comments on the bill, or we can...
Thank you, Chair Wicklund. For the record, my name is Dylan Ferguson. I serve as the director for the Office of Emergency Medical Services. As it stands to, specific testimony on the bill, the office is quite supportive of both the Community Emergency Medical Technician Program, which you have before you, and also our Community Paramedic Program, which is not included in this bill, but is another component of Community EMS. I think that just speaking off the cuff here, community EMS at both the EMT and the paramedic level, I think represent great future opportunities for emergency medical services as we look to try to decrease the emergency demand for 911 services and helps create a career pathway for our older providers as one aspect, or more experienced providers who may not be able to do the daily 911 work with lifting, and just create those additional career pathways. As it relates to 2128, I think that there are a couple of technical aspects related to just cleaning up some minor language related to the education aspects of it to potentially remove some inconsistencies which may have inadvertently been created. But the office is strongly supportive of our community EMS programs for both EMT and paramedic, and I think that these are conversations that are going to continue in the years and sessions to come.
Great. Thank you very much. Members, do you have any questions or comments about this bill? Senator Liske?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Senator Seeberger, how did we get to the numbers, I guess, on lines 3.21 to lines 3.22? We went from $9.75 per 15-minute increment to $25, and then the $100 per hour. And then on top of that, we're adding a mileage as well. Do we have a reasoning? Do we have an understanding? I'm just trying to understand it. I'm not necessarily disagreeing or agreeing. I just want to understand where we're getting those numbers.
Senator Seeberger?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Liske, these are more closely aligned with market rates of what EMTs make in the field. I don't know that you can find an EMT who makes four. But what we're really looking at is to try to match what the value of the services and what folks can be expect to be paid in the field. So if it's being billed out at a rate of $100 per hour, that's certainly not what an EMT is making. You know, that's the service, and then it has to boil down. I know that in the field, EMTs make anywhere from between, you know, $25 an hour to start to, you know, the mid-30 bucks an hour, which is still, I mean, that's not a lot of money for the work that they do. So this is more trying to more closely align the charges with what a community EMT would be paid.
Senator Liske.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, I agree. EMTs definitely are underpaid for the value and the service that they provide. I just like to understand where the funding is coming from or where the fee schedule is, so that way we can kind of compare it and see what it looks like. So I appreciate that explanation. Thanks.
Any other questions or comments? I don't see any. Thank you, Senator Seeberger. I think it looks like a good way to strengthen the program, and we do want to make sure that we're trying to keep up with rates and addressing costs that are incurred. So this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Senate File 2128 is laid over. And next, Senator Seeberger, you have Senate File 1688.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have an author's amendment, the A1.
Senator Liske moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Any opposed? The A1 amendment is adopted. Senator Seeberger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill works to address some of the problems and challenges that we're seeing in our rural emergency medical services system. As the committee is aware, last year we had an EMS task force where we traveled across the state of Minnesota to learn about the state of EMS, from smaller services in greater Minnesota through mid-sized services through urban services. And what we learned is that our rural EMS services are in a crisis. Our rural emergency medical services are the backbone of Minnesota's medical system, and to continue to provide adequate care for our communities, we must also provide adequate funding. This bill sets up a pool payment system for rural EMS systems. The money helps fund and modernize integral services for communities all across greater Minnesota. And it does this by providing a grant process. Ambulance services must apply by the 31st of the year that they are seeking this grant money. And the grant money would go toward rural EMS services and also toward treatment non-transport situations, which currently are not reimbursed at all. And it does this by setting up a fee attached to cell phones. It's a telecommunications fee that would be implemented to help fund the pool payment, and the fee would be 80 cents per retail transaction. And what this means is that on every cell phone bill, there would be 80 cents added to fund this. Now, I know that funding is a challenge this biennium in the legislature, and we really needed to be creative in finding, you know, where do we find the money to do this? We provided emergency aid last session for EMS systems, but all that really did was it didn't stop the bleeding. No pun intended. What it did is it just kind of gave a cash infusion to EMS services that really needed it. But what we are is we're finding ourselves upside down. The EMS services, and particularly rural EMS services, are not bringing in enough reimbursement to sustain the cost of operating EMS. So we had to find a different way to do that. And what we've done is we've found a funding mechanism through a fee onto cell phones that would create this grant pool, and it would allow rural EMS services to apply for grants to shore up and get them the funding that they need to continue operations. One thing people don't maybe necessarily realize is that an ambulance is only paid if we transport a person to the hospital. A lot of the times we go out for a call, we provide treatment on scene, and then we leave. We don't transport the patient, and that's a good thing. That means that we have helped that patient stay in their home, and we have reduced the overcrowding that we're seeing in emergency rooms. But unfortunately, the ambulance service doesn't get paid for that. So we've had, the service has incurred costs, not only the readiness costs of having the personnel there ready to respond, but also the cost of operating that ambulance, treating the patient, and then going back. That's free work, right? So it takes a toll on our rural ambulance services when they are barely making enough money to not even keep their heads above water, but to provide this service without any hope of getting reimbursed for it. So this creates a pool of money, a grant program to allow those services to get at least a little bit of payment for that service. My A1 amendment does one additional thing, and it provides some data collection services mandating that or providing that municipalities, in order to be eligible to receive that grant, provide a little bit of information back on the total number of emergency ambulance calls, dispatch reason, type of emergency service, response mode, etc. And the reason for that is to continue our efforts to gather data across the state to have a better understanding of the number of calls, nature of calls, and what were the work that's being done throughout the state, and to help us get a better handle on how we can once again provide better pre-hospital health care. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Ferguson to fill in any gaps that I left or answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Ferguson.
Chair Wicklund, as it stands to Senate File 1688, you know, this is one mechanism to provide some very much needed funding to emergency medical services. There are certainly other versions that I think that are even before the committee this morning, but as it stands, I don't think that any proposal is wrong. I don't think that I think they're all different policy discussions, all different policy choices. I think the only true mistake is not to find some level of support for emergency medical services as my office continues to try to work to support EMS both in Metro and outstate Minnesota. I will say that 1688 does take what appears to be a bucketed approach with one bucket that Senator Seeberger highlighted very well, the rural uncompensated care pool, which begins on line 4.8. Then there are two other buckets, one relating to a cost of readiness grant program, which would make awards directly to licensed ambulance services, giving me and my office criteria for making those awards. And then beginning on line 3.3, earmarking a section of funding to go to political subdivisions to have those political subdivisions be able to make improvements to emergency medical services within their unique boundaries. So the office has not taken a defined position on any one of the different funding proposals. I think that there are valid policy implications with all of them. I'm grateful to you, Chair Wicklund, and Ranking Member Utke for hearing these bills this morning and for having these discussions. Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And I also have Fire Chief Dobish here from one of the communities I represent, Richfield. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Mike Dobish. I'm the fire chief for the city of Richfield. Madam Chair, committee members, I came to speak in favor of the amendment. You've already adopted it, so I'm going to stand for questions.
Okay, thank you. I do think that adding data collection is a good idea for this type of bill. Members, do you have questions or comments about the bill? Senator Oetke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First question, and I didn't bring my stuff along from a couple years ago, but which would have probably given me my answer, but the 80 cents, the 80 cent fee per line, what will that propose to bring in a year?
Senator Seeberger?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if Director Ferguson has done that math.
Mr. Ferguson?
Senator Wicklund, Senator Seeberger, I believe that that was a figure that would have come in through perhaps the fiscal noting process. I know there was some discussion on the House side, but I believe that those types of questions would be best directed to Commerce. That was not information that the Office of EMS was provided.
Senator Oetke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was, and again, this is from a couple years ago, so memory is not probably the most accurate, but I was thinking a nickel equaled about $12 to $14 million or something like that. It was quite a sizable amount. It might even have been down to, you know, it was based on pennies at that time. But either way, I like what you're trying to do. Fully support that. I just don't agree with the funding mechanism. I think it should come out of the general fund, and that we can find a way to do that because it's greatly needed and it should be a priority issue. And then that way it's spread evenly across all of the state and all users. Now, yes, the majority of people carry a cell phone, but yet I think general fund is the most fair way to spread this out across the full state. But I support what you're doing. It's we do need to beef up what we're doing as far as funding, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Seeberger.
Thank you. And I've done the math. I just, like you, Senator Oetke, I just don't remember. I did do the math, but it came in the neighborhood of what was being requested last session for emergency aid. And as I recall, services were requesting emergency EMS aid in the neighborhood of $129 million. That's what they calculated. That's what they estimated the need at, and this would meet that need. So we're talking funding that exceeds simple $12 to $15 million a year. The need is tremendous and the need is real. The reason for seeking funding through cell phones is we do need a steady funding mechanism for this. Relying simply on the general fund is not going to be fiscally responsible, in my opinion, given the various needs across the state for other items. And we need some sort of dedicated funding source for this. We've seen EMS being underfunded for way too long, and that's why our rural communities, and quite frankly, our metro services are in the trouble that they're in. This is one way to shore that up, provide a steady funding stream. Like you said, pretty much everybody has a cell phone, and in trying to come to a number, how do we meet the needs with not putting too much of a burden on folks? I think if you ask most people, they would agree. You know, heck, I would pay 80 cents or a buck to make sure that I have an ambulance there when I need it, or if my grandfather goes down, that I have quality EMS care there for my family members and my loved ones when I need it.
Thank you. Senator Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Seeberger, for bringing this bill. I appreciate your work on this, as clearly there's a need, as we have discussed for some time. And, you know, everyone in every community deserves to have, you know, when they call 911, to have speedy and quality care. I also appreciate the work on, not every call should take somebody to a hospital. There's real benefits of that, as you stated. I am just curious about the telecom fee. I appreciate you looking at creative ways to fund that and to do that. I'm wondering if any other states have done that, or if this would be truly unique to Minnesota.
Mr. Ferguson?
Chair Wicklund and Senator Bolden, as it stands to other state funding mechanisms for emergency medical services, we really see a variety of different charges. Some states have gone down the pathway of license registration fees. Others have, including my former state of Pennsylvania, relied on traffic citations. There are some that have related. There are some that have relied. I do believe that there are some that the emergency system does rely on some telecom fees. It's not completely out of the realm, as there are currently dedicated telecom fees, I believe, in just about every state in the country for the purposes of funding the 911 system. So it is something that has been done and discussed before. Just as every state is unique, every state's EMS system is also unique. Looking from standard to Senator Rukey's point, general funds, dedicated sales tax. I mean, there's a variety of different funding streams that other states have used.
Senator Bolden. Senator Abler.
Well, thank you. And I don't need to repeat what everybody else has already said. And if this ever makes it to the floor, more people will say it. This is a big deal. You know, the system's collapsing. I'm probably fine in Anoka, you know, it seems like, but if you go very far beyond the metro, you're really in a world of hurt. And I think the people in the metro don't realize that when they go to their cabin, that they're not having the accessibility that they want, and the people living out there certainly should have that kind of coverage. And I appreciate the creativity. At least you're paying for what you're, you know, bringing forward with the courage to have a funding stream. Everybody's for it, but nobody wants to pay for it. This should have been a budget priority 3 years ago when we were talking about this, and we had a ton of money. All this, even one-time money would have been interesting. To find some base funding, essential, important, and nice, this is the essential. I'm not sure if the people around understand the gap. Maybe this has legs, I don't know, but I at least compared to the bills we hear, like a blank for general fund, at least you're willing to stand up, and this is what I would do if I was going to pay for it, to be sure. But at some point, the state has to come together and decide what are our priorities, and some of the things we bought are more like, you know, nice things to have, and the essential things go lacking, hospitals, ambulances, et cetera. So I guess I'm congratulating you for doing your best shot, so thank you.
Any other member questions? Comments? Senator Schieber, I wondered, we didn't see the 80 cents called out in the bill. Do you want a specific number to be placed in the bill for that telecom fee, or did you want to leave that? Because right now I don't think there is a defined amount.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's a good question. Let's leave it the way it is for right now, and I can continue to work on it and have conversations, and we can, I do see that.
We can leave. I mean, we're going to leave the bill for right now, and have, I'm sure you're going to talk more with others about it, and I will as well, and, so we'll continue to have a discussion about it. I just wanted to ask to make sure that you didn't want to do it today, so.
Thank you.
And I agree with others. I think this, the proposal is really sound in terms of addressing what the key needs are, and then having a way to pay for it, I think, is helpful. I would consider the telecom fee to be a reasonable approach. I mean, I carried the bill a couple years ago to add a telecom fee for the 988 line, and it seems to me we have services that people expect to happen, like 911 response and availability of 988 and availability of EMS, that it is seems like a reasonable thing to me to have a fee for that, and then we know ongoing that the communities are supported. So hope that we can continue to have a good discussion about it. Any final thoughts before we lay the bill over?
No, Madam Chair, thank you very much.
And that, with that, Senate File 1688, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. And now we will move to Senator Hoffman. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Sorry I was a little late, but I couldn't get Buck McAuliffe wouldn't give me his EMS light so I could go 5 miles an hour faster on the freeway. So it was
Well, I'm glad.
That was supposed to be funny, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, but well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Senator Hoffman, Senate File 1132.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1132 just establishes it's an Earn While You Learn grant program that should be administered by the Office of EMS. The students are employees and earn a living wage while training to become EMTs for the ambulance service. All ambulance services utilize EMTs for at least 50% of the staffing are eligible. The grant dollars will be used to cover expenses for the employees who are training to be EMTs. Those allowable expenses that will include wages and benefits not to exceed $26 an hour, tuition for the EMT program, fees for the background studies, and the EMT exam fee. Our goal in this is to provide employment to 100 individuals annually as an entry point in the EMS profession, as you know, that is slowing down. So Tom Fennell with the Ambulance Compliance Officer at Mayo Clinic is here, along with our friend Buck to the right of me. So good to see you, Tom.
Good morning, Mr. Fennell. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Fennell. I serve as the regulatory officer for Mayo Clinic Ambulance. As you've heard and as you continue to hear, EMS in our state and EMS in our country is at a turning point. And we're strapped for employees. We have a very significant workforce issue. And we're looking for alternate ways. We're looking for unique ways to address that issue while at the same time not bankrupting the services that are looking to do these types of things. One of the programs that we put into place last fall in one of our smaller communities in southern Minnesota was this Earn While You Learn program. What we did was we addressed the working class people already, the people that had jobs, the people that might be looking for a career change. And we simply just started by word of mouth and simple advertisements, and we were going to take 12 people. We ended up with 43 applications. 43 applications once they learned that they were going to be hired by our ambulance service, paid a livable wage while going to school, while we taught them their EMT class, and then worked with them, got them through the test, got them nationally registered, and then they could become full-fledged members of our service. We ended up with 8 successful people. We took 10 at the first blush. 2 decided it wasn't for them while they were midway through their training, and we took 8 people to the final test, and they all became nationally registered and now are members of our service, rostered members of our service. What's traditionally happened in EMS and with EMT training is that ambulance services wait for those students, normally young people, to get out of that training, and then they have them apply and accept them onto their service. This program is something that by paying a livable wage, by providing the education that would be up to a separate agreement between the service and a licensed training institution, that program might not have to stretch out over 6 months as it does today. A compressed program with basically it's their full-time job to go to school. And so they might go to school 6 hours a day, 8 hours a day, and then that program, that training is condensed. It's much more concentrated, it's much more effective, and it doesn't take as long to produce this. That's why we looked at a livable wage that would make somebody look significantly into leaving their career, leaving their job that they have right now, and is going to come into this field. One of our successful candidates did testify in one of the House committees, I believe, a couple of weeks ago. He was a pizza delivery man. He and his brother were both pizza delivery men, And now we have an upset pizza shop in Austin, Minnesota, because we took two of their staff, two of their good staff, and now they are EMTs with our ambulance service. So this is a different way. It's a unique way of addressing the staffing challenge, and we want it to be available to anybody across the state who can do these types of things and who has this intent and drive to make this particular program happen.
Right. Thank you. Mr. McAlpin, do you have specific comments?
No comments, Madam Chair.
Okay. Members, do you have any questions or comments about this bill? No? I think it sounds like a great idea. I think some people know, even in high school, that they want to pursue a career where they are serving people, and, you know, EMT sounds like an appealing profession, but, you know, for others, if they don't try it at first and they might want to get into the field, this seems like a great way to make it accessible. Senator Hoffman, any final thoughts?
Yeah, you took my words right there, Madam Chair. It's what the Mayo Clinic started to do when they said, you know, let's try this, let's get it out there, and had overwhelming success. It's like, there's a pathway to this, and that's what I think this has. I would normally ask for you to send it to the floor, but because there's a fiscal note to that, I won't even ask you to send it to finance, although that would be an appropriate move. I know you're going to lay this over, Madam Chair, in the hopes that you can find some funding for this, because this is well worth it.
Yes, that's correct, Senator Hoffman, and I appreciate, thank you for coming to testify today. And we will lay Senate File 1132 over for possible consideration. And Senator Hoffman, you have also Senate File 1133.
I do, and that's why Buck is up here, Madam Chair and members. This one, it updates the current volunteer ambulance reimbursement program to reach more ambulance services and support more staff training. This adds the EMR training as reimbursable, as right now the EMRs are now staffing ambulances. It's also increasing the training reimbursement rates, as the cost of training is much higher than the reimbursement. The eligible services are those who respond to 5,000 or fewer calls per year. So it gets to our smaller providers out there that are out, you know, in non-populated areas. And this really adds that $100,000 to the current $361,000 that's annually appropriated. And Buck McAlpin of the Minnesota Ambulance Association is here with us.
Welcome, Mr. McAlpin, and if you could state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thanks, Chair Wicklund and members. Buck McAlpin of the Minnesota Ambulance Association. And just to kind of, you know, we've been working the last few years, and the Ambulance Association's focused on workforce and funding. The Workforce Initiative, Director Ferguson and the prior EMS board and the new EMS division, the one thing we've had really good access through since he's came on as our new executive director a few years ago is good data. And I found out working with committees that the data is really important when we're talking to you about funding. Mr. Ferguson and I had Senator Kupick's, the paramedic scholarship bill in higher ed that the legislature funded the last budget cycle. We've awarded 300 scholarships with that and have 100 paramedics coming out of the field, out of the school. The problem is we're still seeing more paramedics leave than we are come in. So from the high school level that Mr. Fennell talked about, we have another bill this year to really get out to the high schools. The Houston School District would offer a statewide telehealth platform, and then they'd go to the local ambulance to be their clinical training site, to maintaining our current staff and then taking EMTs that Mr. Fennell talked about and moving them into the paramedic level. So this bill today, Senator Hoffman's carrying for us, actually is in statute. The EMS division has operated this program for quite a while. You appropriate $361,000 a year to that. We're asking to have that amount increased to that. And then there's also some real important policy language, as Senator Hoffman referred to. One thing Senator Seeberger and the task force did last year, and the folks that sat on that, was you expanded some flexibility of how we staff ambulances. The rigid EMT paramedic in an ambulance, or two paramedics or two EMTs, you allowed first responder drivers and community-based folks to, if I have the EMT on for the day and I can get Firefighter Hoffman to drive the ambulance, we want to make sure someone's available to get the ambulance out of the garage. And this bill allows that group of folks to come into this reimbursement program as long as they're part of a licensed ambulance service and receive some of this reimbursement. And we also increase the amounts you'll see in the bottom. So the request is for $100,000 a year of new funding and the base funding to stay where it is.
Thank you. Members, do you have any questions or comments about this bill? No questions. Well, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. It seems like some good changes, and we will also lay this bill over for possible consideration.
No chance for the floor.
Senate File 1133 is laid over for possible inclusion. Members, our next two bills, Senator Housechild is the author, and he is currently in the tax committee, and they are going to be completing their work by 9:30. So we will take a recess until approximately 9:30 and then resume when Senator Housechild is available. So we are in recess. I'd like to reconvene the Senate Health and Human Services Committee. Senator Housechild has joined us. And Senator Housechild, you have Senate File 1326. And I see you have, there's an A1 amendment. Did you want to adopt that as an author's amendment?
Yes, please, Madam Chair.
Senator Bolden moves the A1 amendment. Members, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Any opposed? The amendment is adopted. Senator Housechild.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and my sincere apologies for being a little bit late. I was in tax committee and I had a tribal chairman and a couple of county commissioners testifying on something, so I was just leaving that. I appreciate your patience. Today I have for your consideration Senate File 1326, a bill that increases medical assistant payment rates for ambulance services. The last time there was an increase in Medicaid rates for ambulance services was 2016, when a 5% increase was given to ambulance services outside of the Metro, Duluth, St. Cloud, Rochester, Mankato, and Moorhead. With this increase, the change to rates would be made statewide and apply to fees for services, managed care, and county-based purchases. Its effective date is July 1st, 2026. And with that, Madam Chair and committee members, I do have a testifier from the Minnesota Ambulance Association.
Mr. McAlpin, please state your name for the record and begin.
Yeah, Chair Wicklund and members, Buck McAlpin again with Minnesota Ambulance Association. And the amendment put this number in as a 10% rate increase is what we decided on. I think as we've talked to Senator Seeberger's bill earlier, and a bill that'll be heard after this bill of Senator Housechild's, more around rural sustainability funding, is the bill last year had really quite an impact to rural Minnesota to help with EMS services. But when we look at our larger EMS systems, as Senator Seeberger alluded to about even the metro services with some problems, we know in our high volume EMS systems, and you've heard it over and over in this committee about Medicaid rates, that any increase in Medicaid rates are important. And I think as this committee works on your budget and other opportunities and funding sources become available, we think that any money that's put into Medicaid rates lifts the boat statewide up, but it'll also help with some long-term sustainability financially.
Thank you. Members, do you have any questions or comments about the bill? Senator Edke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Hoffman, I just have to do it.
I love it.
10% increase to Medicaid, I see no reference to any costs on this. Any idea what you're looking at?
Senator Housechild or Mr. McAlpin?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Utke, I actually received a fiscal note late last night on the House side, and it was about, surprisingly, it was still a number is $5 million a year or $10 million for the biennium.
Senator Utke?
Thank you. I mean, I'm glad that we got a number, and you know, I had no clue what it was going to be. And in the realm of what we see around here, that's kind of a small number. but we got to figure out how to pay for it. So, thank you much.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments about the bill? Senator Hauschild.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I would just say I've been doing a couple of town halls in my district, and as you might know, I represent the most rural district in the state, and I can't tell you how many folks have been expressing concerns around the Medicaid cuts that could be coming from the federal level. That would have a devastating impact on everything in healthcare in our rural communities, especially hitting some of our rural hospitals, rural EMS, all of these services. So I'm really cognizant of that impact, and I think where the state can step in and try to make sure that we're you know, doing bigger matches and trying to get Medicaid rates that are more sustainable, I think is really important to combat what's happening at the federal level. So I appreciate the consideration.
Thank you, Senator Hauschild. Yeah, I think the 10% is certainly a modest amount, and you know, per testimony we've heard earlier today, wouldn't be like sufficient to solve all the problems, right, but definitely takes a step towards creating greater sustainability. So thank you for bringing the bill forward, and Senate File 1326, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion. Senator Hauschild, you have Senate File 1080.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I have been talking about EMS for the last 2 years. This is an issue that really impacts my region, but especially other rural areas across the state of Minnesota. And when it comes to rural ambulance services, we really see a compounding effect on how difficult it is to provide these services in remote and rural areas. And it's for a couple of different reasons. Many of our rural communities are aging at a faster rate than other parts of the state. That means that there are more calls and more need for ambulance services. We also know that many of those folks are on Medicare, and we have higher Medicaid rates as well in my region. And so the reimbursement rates, as we just talked about in the last bill, are much more difficult to sustain the services when they don't have private providers paying for many of those services. You compound on top of that that many of the primary service areas in greater Minnesota are not profitable. They are losing money because of the number of runs. And so what happens is you have a situation where you have free riders and a community, oftentimes a small community like Tower, a community of a couple of hundred people, taking on the license for that primary service area, a surrounding area, and putting that on the backs of property tax owners in these small rural communities that are already at a lower tax capacity than many other areas in the state, having to pay for those services. Services, Madam Chair, that oftentimes in wealthier communities are provided by private providers or large nonprofits. So I just want to emphasize over and over again, I don't know how many times I can say it, that this is really a moral dilemma for the state of Minnesota. It's a moral imperative for the state that we ensure, regardless of your zip code, that you have an ambulance service available to you and that it doesn't get stacked on top of the local residents that can hardly afford everything from their schools to their basic primary services in their communities. And so, Madam Chair, that's what this bill does. What this bill does is it takes the program that we did last year, where we provided emergency aid to our rural ambulance services and some of our surrounding regional hubs to make sure that those services are whole. And Madam Chair, I do have an A2 amendment that I'd like to introduce as an author's amendment.
Thank you, Senator Hauschild. We will get that A2 amendment passed out, and then we can.
Madam Chair, I'll move it if you would like.
Okay. Senator Abler moves the A2 amendment. Thank you.
Thanks.
Members, this is Senator Hauschild's an author's amendment for him. So members, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Any opposed? The A2 amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So with this program, eligible applicants include any licensed service who can prove an operational deficit. Excluded applicants in the bill include licensed whose individual primary service area are located mostly in the 7-county metro area. Licensees who are mainly in Duluth, Mankato, St. Cloud, or Rochester will receive an award formula based on an actual need, accounts for revenue collected compared to operational and capital costs. However, this bill does eliminate Mayo Clinic from applying, which has been approved, or I shouldn't say approved, but Mayo is aware of this and is okay with the fact that they are excluded from this bill. This change would cost approximately $40 million per year across Greater Minnesota. Anyone operating in the black or making a profit under this formula is not eligible to apply. This bill includes eligibility expenditure guidelines and requires reporting back to the Office of EMS. Additionally, this bill provides an audit authority focused specifically on applicants' financial data and includes an annual application process. All that is needed is a long-term sustainable funding source that maintains the movement of public funds to be sent where they are needed. And with that, Madam Chair, I do have two testifiers, one from Perham area EMS and the ambulance director from Tower.
Thank you. First, we have Mark Ebeling. If you can please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Chairman Wicklund and members of the committee. My name is Mark Ebeling, operations manager for Perm Area EMS. I'd like to thank you guys for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 1080 and appreciate Senator Hochschild's willingness to continue finding solutions to these critical funding challenges, especially with EMS systems. Perm Area EMS operates as a joint powers board-owned public ambulance service, with the ownership is distributed between 12 townships and 3 municipalities. Our primary service area is approximately 400 square miles, and Perm Area EMS responds to approximately 1,600 calls a year with an advanced life support ambulance and staffs 2 advanced support life ambulances around the clock to ensure coverage for 911 calls and emergent interfacility hospital transfers. Rural agencies experience longer transport and response times, extending the time requirement to complete single responses and have fewer calls per square mile and per staff ambulance, as metro agencies. Thus, rural EMS systems have a larger expense per call and fewer opportunities for revenue. In the past few years, we have seen our Medicare, Medicaid payer mix increase by approximately 27%. In the year 2024, Medicare payments were at about 25% and Medicaid payments were at about 21% of our gross charges. Commercial insurance has also dropped to where they're at about 37% of our gross charges. In 2023, our average cost per response, including cost of readiness, was about $1,292, with an average reimbursement per response of $997. This led to a net operating budget of a negative $373,271. With this budget gap, for the first time since the founding of Perm Area EMS, we required a subsidy from our Joint Powers Board. Unfortunately, without any legal obligation to ensure access to emergency medical services and a requirement for EMS to respond regardless of subsidization, we have had an increasingly difficult time compelling local governments to stay involved in supporting EMS. Do have to thank you for the one-time aid last year that made a big impact and was much appreciated, but it was not even enough to cover our operational deficit for even 1 year. Senate File 1080, as amended, will provide a framework for public dollars in the form of grants to get to licensed ambulance services that are struggling. We can appreciate the attention in the bill to accountability and transparency, and we want the committee to know that without intervention from the state, services will continue to face closures in Greater Minnesota, which will have a negative impact on the response of medical emergencies. We know legislators toured the state last year, as we heard them talk about earlier, and they heard from EMS providers, and we hope the message was clear. Without financial help from the state, we do not know how much longer services in rural Minnesota will continue to operate. Senate File 1080 may not have a revenue source yet, but we are hopeful the source of funding can be found before legislative session ends. Chair Wicklund, thank you for allowing me to testify in full support of Senate File 1080, and I would be happy to take any questions from the committee.
Thank you very much. Next we have Dina, and I apologize if I get this wrong, Suikkanen. If you can please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Dina Suikkanen, and I'm the ambulance director and EMS director for the city of Tower in beautiful Tower, Minnesota on Lake Vermilion. I want to thank you, Chair Wicklund, and the members of the committee. And I also want to thank Grant for giving me this opportunity to come and speak to you guys. I have been actively serving as an EMT for almost 20 years, and I've also been the EMS ambulance director for the past 5 years. One of the biggest things that you'll hear from all of us is funding's just not there. We're lucky enough that we have areas that help us purchase an ambulance. We typically will have enough money right now about every 10 years just because of the cost of ambulances. We received the money last year, and I want to thank everybody so much for that. But unless it's a permanent solution, things won't continue to get better. Just as the man from Perham said, our calls take longer. We're typically an hour and a half to 2 hours for every call. Ms. Seeberger brought up the no-load calls. We have quite a few of them as well. 911 calls us, we go out there. If the person chooses not to go, or if there's a medical reason why they don't need to go, then we don't get paid. We're also probably in the 70s to 80% of Medicare and Medicaid in our area. We're low income. We have a lot of different areas. We do have a beautiful lake, but many of our people are retired. Therefore, they live on, or they get Medicare. And so they're, what they pay us versus what regular insurance pays us is very low. We are, you know, to us, it's a lot. We have about 12 people who are active members of our service. Those 12 members are taking up to 500 calls a year. Those 500 calls, you think, oh, they make good money. Actually, we don't. We're making less money than we did when we had about 300 calls a year. We run more on having people who are quote unquote volunteer or very low paid on call. Well, with that many calls, it just is not feasible. We need to have enough funds that we can have full-time people making decent wages. We don't even have a place to house people. So we're following the statute. We have people available 24/7, 365, but it's hard. It has to be local people because we do not have any place to house them. Last legislative session, Grant and the rest of them sounded the alarm. Medicaid and Medicare payments do not cover the cost of our communities needing EMS services. So we need to start looking at a way, just like fire and police officers, for us to have funding that comes from the government. I guess, in my opinion, we need to remember that those of us that work in EMS, especially in rural Minnesota, we do it because we have a passion to help others. The problem is there aren't that many of us anymore, and we're getting older. We need to start pulling in some younger ones, and in order to do that, they need to have a job that pays. They need to have a job that has benefits. They need to have a reason to stick around and become members of our service area. Unless we can't get higher reimbursements, unless we don't continue to have sustainable income coming in, our service area will start seeing more closures. I really hope that you remember all the testimony that was given last year. I hope that you remember the passion that we showed and how hard it is to try and support our community areas. I also hope that you really think about the fact that this is important to fund. Tower Ambulance, you know, we're small but mighty. We have received, you can see them right over there, the Certificate of Clinical Excellence, both of the years that it's been put out so far. We do our job and we do it well, but we need more help. We need the state to look at us as being just as important to fund as our fire departments and our we know this bill does not have a revenue source to fund it as of now, but we know this legislator has time to come up with funding for it. We also know that you find us just as important as we find us. So please help us, not just those of us on the Iron Range, but all of Minnesota. We want to be there to take care of our people and to make sure that everybody has health care that is fair and equal. I really would, you know, Chair Wicklund, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify, and you have my full support of State Files 1080. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have, and if any of you would like to come up and see what our service area looks like up here or what we run out of, please feel free to reach out to me. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, I have Nathan Zacharias here. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Nathan Zacharias, and I'm the Technology Policy Analyst for the Association of Minnesota Counties. Here today to offer AMC's support for Senate File 1080. We have a strong interest in reliable and quality ambulance services for every community in Minnesota. We know that EMS providers, as you've heard many times today, they struggle with rising operating costs, staffing shortages, and insufficient reimbursement rates. Counties, community boosters, and other local governments have stepped up to close some funding gaps where they can, but we do need that long-term sustainable funding model to ensure that continued viability of EMS services are seen across the state. Without adequate funding, we do risk losing these critical services, which would have a devastating consequence for communities across our state. And that's why AMC believes that Senate File 1080 is so important. The bill represents funding certainty and a guarantee from the state that Minnesotans can continue to rely on these essential services. And I'll just close by saying thank you to Senator Hochschild and Senator Seeberger, Senator Kupek, and others on the EMS task force. You helped make EMS a priority last session and again this session. And most importantly to AMC's members, you took time to visit our communities and listen to our stories, which was very important, and we thank you for that. With that, thanks for the opportunity to be here and happy to answer any questions should you have them.
Thank you. Members, questions or comments about the bill? Senator Oedtke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And once again, I mean, we're talking about a subject we all know that the dire needs that are out there, but I do have a question and a concern, and that's around the eligibility for these grants. It looks to carve out some, and in particular, up in my, where I live in Park Rapids, we're served by North Memorial. It appears that they might be cut out of this. Is that true?
Senator Hochschild.
Thank you, Chair Wicklund and Senator Utke. No, I believe North Memorial services are covered, particularly for the rural primary service areas that they have, because I know that they're metro, but they have a lot of rural primary service areas. With that said, I'd like to go back, if it's okay, don't quote me, and I'll confirm that 100% after the committee.
Senator Utke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that because, yeah, we do have these metro-owned providers, right, but they're coming out into rural Minnesota, and actually, we appreciate everything they're doing because we are, as the testifiers have stated, and we all know, we see it up in our area I'm at, we've lost a couple providers in the last year or two, and then in this case, North Memorial picks up some, and others are doing the same. So I just want to make sure that we can separate this metro versus rural, and if they're out there providing services, we need to be allowing them in on this same pool of money, grants, however this turns out to be, because you know, first testifier is from Perham. That's right in my backyard, too. Across northern Minnesota, we're all the same. We have a heavy retirement population because of the lake, so the Medicare and Medicaid are the dominant payers, and that's why we're here, is because they don't pay enough. So, I just want to make sure that we're including, you know, in this case, I'm talking North Memorial, but I know we've got other partners that are covering other parts of our rural area, and we got to just make sure they're all treated fairly. So, thank you.
Madam Chair and Senator Utke, I do have Mr. Simonson here who can perhaps provide some information on that.
Mr. Simonson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Eric Simonson representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Senator Utke, to your question, which was a good one, if you look at the language in the A2 amendment, which was adopted early on, 1.15 to 1.18, it talks about licenses that are excluded, and essentially it excludes those licensees where their primary service area are located mostly within one of the seven county metro counties, as well as if their PSA falls within the city of Duluth, Mankato, St. Cloud, or Rochester, and that essentially is Mayo Clinic. So any other provider within greater Minnesota would be eligible, assuming they could provide or prove to the director that they had an operating deficit.
Senator Utke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. That, you know, and I had seen that same thing, but you know, just wanted to clarify that we're making sure that when they reach out and come out and offer, they, you know, have the garage, they house the services, that they're able to participate. So thank you.
Senator Abler.
Well, thanks. And as an excluded county, I get it, and that's appropriate. I did appreciate your first testifier with, I believe you could point out what services would be available if you could find a horse to pull that wagon around. That's what some people are down to, and you could even comment that would be the response time, which I think is where we're at. And I don't think, I'll give credit to him, I don't think the governor understands the state of affairs here, because he would not have been so silent in his budget if he understood literally what I just mentioned and is so clear to all the members of this committee. And I want to commend whoever wrote this bill for coining a new term, an operating deficit account, which is something that we never should have needed to talk about. And so I commend the cities that are going way out of their way to fund all this. Maybe we should come up with a hospital operating deficit account as well, Madam Chair, as we discuss who's able to stay in business these days with some of the choices that have been made spending money. I do have a question for you or somebody. You mentioned the term free riders in your opening comments. There's free riders and people who don't need riders. Are you able to say no, like, sir, you, ma'am, sorry, you don't need a ride. We're not taking you just because you want a ride to get a warm place or something. And they're clearly not in any emergent need.
Senator Hauschild.
Thanks, Madam Chair and Senator Abler. Actually, let me clarify. I understand what you're saying in terms of people that may not need an ambulance. What I was referring to.
Oh, I get that. I just provoked my thinking.
Right. But when I say free riders, I should have explained it better. When I say free riders, I mean when you have these very large primary service areas that cover many, many miles, hundreds of miles perhaps, and then they're not profitable, and you have a local community in that whole primary service area that takes on that license, what happens happens is only that city only has the capability of taxing their citizens and their city limits. And so you have this entire primary service area that is getting the benefits of a rural ambulance service provided by the property tax owners of a very small town in that primary service area. So Dina Sukkonen is the EMS director in Tower. Tower subsidizes the ambulance service for that entire region and Lake Vermilion, some of the wealthiest homes in our state, you know, despite the fact that the local residents in Tower are paying for it. So that's what I meant when I talked about free riders in this case.
No, Madam Chair, I was just doing free association. So I just, your point, I appreciate you clarifying that, but, yep. And that wasn't my question, but it's good you can clarify that. And I don't know, I mean, every author of these bills is trying to find a way to solve a glaring, obvious problem to anybody who would bother to notice it. And if I have criticisms of anybody, it's like, please notice that when you're setting your priorities. But it seems like one of the reasons that you're giving rise to people who don't need it, and I've just heard that over time, and mm-hmm. that would add to the burden. But I've never asked a question before, but do you have to give rides to people who don't need them, who are clearly non-emergent?
Senator Hochschild?
Madam Chair, Senator Abler, I am not a emergency medical services expert, but from what I've gathered in the roundtables and discussions I've had with experts, there are certainly cases where an ambulance is called and the individual is determined by a medical professional, an EMT or paramedic, that they do not in fact need an ambulance ride. And that is one of the biggest challenges we face with reimbursements, because right now you can't get reimbursed for non-transport. So it might be that the paramedic comes and helps the individual with whatever they might be dealing with, but they don't in fact need emergency care. Or perhaps they do need care on site and the paramedic is able to provide that, or the EMT is able to provide that, and they don't need to take a ride in the ambulance. In those, either of those cases, from my understanding, they do not get reimbursed. Yeah. And so we have a real problem. And it's no fault. I don't want to blame anybody. Like, I'm not trying to say people shouldn't call 911. They absolutely should. And we should never shy away from that. However, we need to be cognizant of the fact that folks are responding to these calls, often driving far distances in greater Minnesota especially, and then not having to transport them, not getting the reimbursement, and it creates these adverse incentives when it comes to our emergency services.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam
Chair. Senator Abler.
Well, so there aren't people riding that don't need a ride, that there's, you go out to triage. I mean, that's a minor thing. There's probably just a handful of those, but not very many. But these going out there to do a service, or providing a medical service out there, it seems maybe you need to work on the insurance coverage. So a paramedic is allowed to bill, or the agency is allowed to bill on behalf of services offered. There's no place else that people get free medical care, unless they go to an ER and they're poor and you have to serve them anyway. But I'm just trying to, I support your problem. I'm just trying mm-hmm. to help understand it a bit better.
Right.
I think you've done a good job of presenting your case. And so, Madam Chair, let's do something.
Senator Abler. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I might just respond to that last piece. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Abler. I will say that the EMS task force made a trip to Washington, D.C. to advocate with our federal delegation on these issues. I also took a trip out there a couple of months before the task force officially went out there. And Senator Tina Smith has sort of taken this on when she started hearing sort of the rumblings from the state side and the state legislature. She did roundtables across the state, one in particular in the Iron Range that I attended, and then presented a bill specifically on the issue you're talking about, which is reimbursement at the federal level for non-transport care. And so there is efforts underway. We just, you're absolutely right. We have to do kind of everything we can with regards to this issue.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Abler.
So I'm suddenly provoked in this discussion just for a minute. But I mean, Minnesota is 95% insured in some way or something like that. You know, a whole cadre has medical assistance. And we could actually make this a compensable thing. Medicare, we could not. Self-insureds, we could not, but we could require Minnesota insurers to do it, and then a lot of times the self-insureds would follow along. And so I'm not sure I'd rely on the federal government to pay for much of anything new, but I think on a Medicare ride, where they go out and they keep them from going to the hospital because they serve them there, it'd actually not be a cost center, it might be a savings center. Just a thought. So, and I would support a bill like that. Thank you.
Any other member comments or questions? Not seeing any. Senator Hauschild, thank you for bringing this forward. I think that we have heard today some tactical bills that have specific things they're trying to solve, but your bill and Senator Seeberger's bill, we're trying to get at bigger questions of how to solve this funding issue and what's the best way forward to make sure that different types of communities' needs are met. And I appreciate your bringing that forward for discussion, and I know we'll have a lot more discussion about it. Seems like a very like a good approach as well. So look forward to continuing to discuss this bill. If there aren't any more questions or comments, we will Senate File 1080 as amended is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. And with that, we have reached the end of our agenda, and we are adjourned.